Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is an hour with Dr. Robert Brennan and my very special guest and lady of an hour, of the hour. And my returning guest is Elizabeth Hart. Elizabeth Hart has a degree in an academic background in philosophy, just like my wife, and she's been an independent person investigating the overuse and misuse of vaccine products and conflicts of interest within vaccination policy for going on a good, 15 years now. And this includes a critique on the ethical aspects of over-vaccination, especially mandatory vaccination. You've come into your own this past couple of years, Elizabeth, with the, you know, the COVID era.
Yeah, and certainly a lot to look at there.
Yes, and I described you last time as a prolific letter writer. I must confess, I used to think of letter writing as just, well, what's the point? I mean, it doesn't change anything. But it must be said that especially the letters that you write to so many positions in authority, that what they provide is they provide a little piece of history that people cannot say they were not made aware of another argument, of a piece of evidence. And so if they choose to ignore that, that's also part of the historical record. And we certainly ought to be able to use it to bring them to account. So it's all useful.
That's right. Well, yep. I think it's very important to write these letters and put things on the record. You know, it's a record of evidence that these things have been brought to their attention. And a recent letter or email I forwarded is to the chair of ATAGI. Mm-hmm. That's the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, which is making all these recommendations about the COVID injections and about all the other vaccines that are on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And the thing I've raised just recently is really the quite shocking situation of children 5 to 11 years old being jabbed with ATAGI recommending this. And it just doesn't make any sense at all, because the children aren't at risk. You know, sure, they may get infected, but it's nothing to them. You know, it's of no consequence to them, the children. And to start now injecting them with injections which are known to be defective, that don't prevent infection or transmission, what is that going to mean? If you've got a person who's not at risk of a disease or the virus, what will it mean to now inject them deliberately with injections that are known to be defective? I can't understand why the doctors' organisations aren't up in arms and questioning this.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yes, and you were quite generous in the numbers you provided to say that, well, let's say 1 in 500,000 people within young people in this demographic of ages 5 to 11 in the UK had died of COVID. I remember back a ways, I looked at the numbers from up to age 18 was 36 at the time in total, and that's in a population of 67 million. And all of them had super severe multiple comorbidities where one could say they probably would have died of something else anyway. They weren't your run-of-the-mill healthy child. And so whether it's in the UK, Australia, and the evidence with our own eyes in Australia, but also in US, this is not a deadly virus for children, and yet they're pushing it on us.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, the PBAC, which, as you would know, that's usually been the final arbiter of what vaccines will go on the schedule. And with this COVID response, it seems like the PBAC review has been pushed aside. That it's different now. I tend to think if there'd been a PBAC review, this injection wouldn't have gone on the schedule, because it doesn't provide herd immunity. It's a mystery as to how this injection has gotten onto the schedule, not just for 5 to 11-year-olds, but for most people, actually, because most people are not at risk of COVID-19. Now, for whatever reason, the governments around the world and the Australian government have chosen to really beat up this disease as if it's something that's serious for everybody. And we really need a review now of all of these statistics that frightened everybody for the last 2 years, all these cases that were reported and the deaths. There needs to be a very careful analysis of this now to see if this was all justified, because there seemed to be a desperation to count as many deaths as possible as COVID. And now we're asking the question, were these deaths with COVID or of COVID? And it's looking more and more like a lot of these deaths were with COVID or with a positive PCR test anyway. And as you know, there's so much, you know, controversy about the PCR tests. So there's so much now that has to be gone back and looked at the beginning. You know, how did we end up with a vaccine response to this virus when it was known from the beginning it wasn't a problem for most people? That's what's got to be looked at now, because we've just been through the most astonishing 2 years. Everybody's just been pulled through, sort of shell-shocked. And now in the cold, hard light of day, we've got to look at what has really gone on here. Mm. And what we can see is that there is a multi-billion dollar COVID injection market, a multi-billion dollar testing market. Surveillance, you know, has been put in place where people can be put under surveillance at the whim of the government. There's a lot going on here, and there's a lot that needs to be examined.
Yes, there was a recent revelation of the CDC in the United States monitoring people's phones, because, of course, the phones have as a geolocation function to see if they were following the rules. And like you said, this has been something that's been known to us since the beginning, and that is that there was a coding problem. Anyone who died within, originally it was in some parts of the world, of 60 days and 28 days of a positive PCR, from whatever cause and with whatever contributing factors, it was coded as a COVID death. Even if they died with the positive test, but with a terminal end stage cancer that was riddling their body, it was still a COVID death. It was remarkable.
Yeah.
These are in people who are...
So why were they doing that?
Yeah, you know, potentially...
What? They wanted to beat this up.
Yeah, the average age of death in many places, including northern Italy, where there was a massive spike, was older than the average life expectancy. And yet...
And now we've got this situation where, reportedly, over 95% of the Australian population has been jabbed.
Mm-hmm.
And I am reeling in horror at the thought of this, because this is a new type of injection. All these people who've been jabbed who didn't need to be jabbed, what has this done to natural immunity, the natural immune response going forward? I mean, you'd be familiar with people like Geert Vandenbosch, who are saying that this could be a disaster going forward with these injections.
And by and large, he's been vindicated, hasn't he?
Yeah, well I raised this back when this began, actually, in March 2020, I sent a rapid response to the British Medical Journal on an article where I was questioning this, you know, saying, is it ethical to impede access to natural immunity, the case of SARS-CoV-2? I was saying, you know, that children, young adults, you know, people can mount their own effective immune response to this. Why are we going this vaccine route? And it really gets back to the controversial Neil Ferguson and his report from Imperial College London, which sort of said at the time, this is what we're doing, you know, we're looking at a vaccine response. And that is what we've got to look at this. Who said we had to have a vaccine response? Because this is something to think about. In December 2019, Heidi Larson, who's the director of the Vaccine Confidence Project, she made a presentation at this WHO Global Vaccine Safety Summit. And in her plenary lecture, she said, we've shifted the human population to dependency on vaccine-induced immunity. We're in a very fragile state now. We have developed a world that is dependent on vaccinations.
Mm.
Now, that is a shocking statement, and particularly when you think of COVID-19, when you think of vaccine-induced immunity, well, it's not a vaccine and it's not immunity. They're giving people these injections which purportedly are supposed to protect from serious disease and death, which most people weren't at risk of, so why on earth are they getting the injections? But now we're in the unknown, you know, and this, it's not immunity, because whatever this thing is supposed to be doing, it wears off within a few weeks. So, it's just unbelievable to think of what's gone on. It's like an emperor's new clothes situation of you've rushed ahead with this vaccine solution, and yet it's shaping up to be a disaster now.
Mm.
You spend all these billions of dollars on these injections, injected all these people, and now we don't know what we're facing going forward.
Yes, and from one of the pro-vax publications I read, that even this is assuming it worked at all, that the effect in this age demographic dropped by 90% within less than a month. So, I mean... it's pointless. The other thing I just wanted to point out is of course, it's the counter argument that will be given us when it comes to COVID vaccination in the young is that, well, if they catch the virus, they'll get this multi-system inflammatory disorder that can wind them up in ICU. It might not kill them, but it will cause their organs great havoc. And the pediatrician who put this to me, I said, okay, well, what's the chances of them getting this if they catch COVID? And they said, oh, it's about 1 in 2,000, 1 in 3,000, which is, you know, not small. Now, when you look at how many kids were infected with the virus when the virus went through, for example, Japan, that would have meant about at least 10,000 kids in ICU with this syndrome. But that didn't happen. It would be about 50 or 60,000 kids in continental Europe with this syndrome in ICU. That didn't happen. So that's a total beat up. So kids are not at risk from this virus. They can acquire natural immunity, that being far superior. And it's not beholden on the child to protect the adult, as if they're sort of a pawn in an adult's immunological game, even if it did prevent transmission, which it doesn't. So why the hell put it on kids?
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're giving the kids...
Yeah.
They're saying one of the excuses they will say for the children getting jabbed is to supposedly protect other people,
mm-hmm.
which is just appalling. That is not ethical. You know, focus on the people who need protection in the way that protects them. But you can't expect to inject millions of children with these are experimental injections. But mm-hmm. this is an experiment and that's underway. And people haven't been informed about this.
Mm.
Greg Hunt has admitted that this is a global experiment.
That's right.
Now, you would know with clinical trials, people would have to sign pages of a document to participate in a vaccine trial, you know, clinical trials. And yet we've got a situation now where this is a global trial. They're experimenting on everybody with this new technology. It's mind-blowing how this is happening and how people have been really roped into it, being rushed into it. We feel like we're in a movie, this simplistic situation. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a virus. It's a novel virus, which it isn't. And now people, the solution is the vaccine, the vaccine. So that would be one dose. But no, it's two doses. Oh, actually, it's going to be three doses now. Oh, it could be four.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually got 280 million doses secured, as they call it. That's more than 10 doses for every single person in Australia.
Yes,
who knew
last
that?
I heard we had 25 or 26 million or thereabouts.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is the thing. And who knew that when they were being lined up for these injections? Who was properly informed about their own level of risk about taking these injections? No, it's just been a non-stop pressure with television advertising, radio advertising for people to submit and have these injections to supposedly protect everybody else. You know, this is a marketing campaign that's been put together. And I want to challenge you, Robert, where have the doctors been? They have been part of this. The Australian Medical Association, which is headed by Omar Khorshid, who's a knee doctor, you know, he is no expert in these, in viruses and vaccines. Karen Price of the Royal Australian College of General Physicians, she's a general physician, general practitioner. She has no expertise in this, and yet they have been right behind this and not asking these questions. I've written to Karen Price, raising over and over again the problem that people are not giving consent to this. It's not valid voluntary consent because so many people have been coerced into this. She just completely ignores me.
Mm-hmm.
These people are showing utter contempt for the community.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot get over this. It's like, it seems to me to be just pure negligence to be not engaging in this. I've written to ARPRA. I finally got confirmation from ARPRA that yes, doctors have an obligation to get consent, that they're supposed to be informing patients before they give these injections. And yet that is not happening because people are not being properly informed. And mm-hmm. how can you possibly give consent if you're being mandated to take these medical interventions?
Mm. On that note, we're going to go to a short ad break. This is TNT Radio.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
We will flatten the curve of taxation. Don't watch this video if you think it's okay to have your tax dollars pay the Prime Minister a salary higher than the President of the United States.
Come on, man!
Don't watch this if you like paying a company tax well above the OECD average. And don't watch this if you love to stifle progress by taking money from small businesses and giving it to the government to waste. Hi, I'm David Limbrick, a Member of Parliament for the Liberal Democrats here in Victoria, and I want to cut taxes because the government has taken enough from you already. I want to talk to you about the fourth policy in the Liberal Democrats' Freedom Manifesto, low, flat taxes. Australia has one of the highest company tax rates in the world, and we spend those tax dollars on the stupidest things imaginable, like corporate welfare and subsidies. The OECD company tax rate is 23%. Australia sits at 30%. The Liberal Democrats want to bring this down to a flat rate of 20% across the board. If you're making less than $40,000, you'll pay zero tax. A flat tax simplifies and makes the economy more efficient and dynamic. By lowering company tax rates to a competitive level, we'll attract better businesses and investors to Australia. No longer will our best and brightest jump ship and set up successful businesses in countries with better incentives. We can keep our entrepreneurs here. The reality is that with a lower tax rate, businesses grow and prosper. Think about this. If a business with $100 million profit gets a tax cut to 20%, that business would now have an extra $10 million to open new stores, develop new products, and employ more staff. That means jobs for you and your family and better products and services for us all. In the long term, this policy will mean that businesses can employ more staff, pay higher wages, and they can stop wasting time and resources on clever ways to minimise their tax. If you want an Australia of low tax and high opportunity, then vote Liberal Democrats. To learn more, head to our website, www.ldp.org.au.
Authorised by John Humphreys for the Liberal Democratic Party, Mount Waverley, Victoria.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT and Robert Brennan and my very special guest, Elizabeth Hart. And you can find Elizabeth's work on vaccinationispolitical.net. That's vaccinationispolitical.net. Before the ad break, you were asking me about, you know, where were the doctors? And I keep on quoting this, my favourite meme of probably the last couple of years, which was on an Ottawa truck, which was the truckers are doing what the doctors didn't. And, you know, I think there's a complex reason I'd offer, but in part it's because us doctors are like priests of a secular church, and if one priest is heavily criticised, then it speaks something of the church as a whole, you know. And there's this term that's often bandied about, you know, to not bring the profession into disrepute and to not lower the status and authority of the profession. I guess that's one reason. Another reason is that Pfizer et al. Are playing upon the vaccination in general and vaccinology in general as being holy, because there's this, as a philosopher, you'd love the lack of logic here. It's that, you know, because polio, then COVID, because smallpox, then COVID. It's kind of like, you know, you can even create a syllogism here. The major premise is, you know, because polio is a deadly disease, it was cured by vaccination, and we have a vaccine or so-called vaccine against COVID, therefore you should take it. In a similar vein, you could say, well, an appendectomy is a surgery, a life-saving surgery, wonderful surgery, but it's a surgery. Well, then a frontal lobotomy is a surgery. That's a minor premise, ergo, we all should have a frontal lobotomy. Not every surgery is the same. Not every vaccine is the same. Why just assume the equivalence of them? It's amazing.
Well, that's right. And you think, how come doctors are getting away with this? People expect that doctors are highly educated. Mm-hmm. And yet it seems they don't seem to be very much, you know, in the way of critical thinking. Mm. And what's really serious about this is because of these mandates in Australia, and it's looking like, you know, we're supposed to be a liberal democracy. Mm-hmm. Mandated medical interventions. This is unbelievable that this mm-hmm. is happening. Mm-hmm. Mandated medical interventions. I just don't understand how it can be happening. I've asked for evidence to support these mandates. They've been put in place by the state and territory governments, and then employers have followed, and all sorts of people, golf clubs, sports clubs, theatres have followed, setting their own mandates, telling other people to have medical interventions, interfering in these people's own personal decisions about their health. This is the most astonishing thing. You know, if we survive this, we're going to look back and say, how could this have happened? You know, we've got a situation now where people were being forced out of medicine, basically, if they didn't take the injections themselves and participate in this sort of basically forced injections upon everybody. So you were forcing out the people who were the critical thinkers. The people who wouldn't comply were being punished and pushed out. And what you were left with was either people who conformed under duress and who weren't happy about it, but they had to because they were maintaining their livelihood or whatever, or people who were just complying. So you're getting these compliant people who are taught not to question. And it seems like this has been happening in the medical profession now for some years, that they're too frightened to speak out, because if you speak out, you can be ostracized. That is a major problem when we've got things like that happening in society. If people lose the courage to speak up because they won't be compliant. And it's serious now with the vaccination situation. For years now, the vaccine schedules have been blowing out. And I know this is a controversial subject for you, but they've been blowing out. And doctors should have been asking questions about this. Why are we giving children 6 doses of diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis? Why are children getting 4 doses of polio? Why has the flu vaccine gone on the schedule for children 0 to 4 years? Now, why aren't doctors asking these questions?
Yeah, well, once again, it's the holiness of vaccine, and so the sacred holy status of the vaccine makes it somehow gives it some sort of magical quality. Whereas in medicine, it's completely acceptable to ask the question of a medication. Well, if it's effective at a dose of, let's say, 50 milligrams per day, well, it doesn't follow that it's going to be even more effective at 200 milligrams per day, or adding an agent of similar kind and having 200 milligrams of that, you know. And so, yeah, that it shouldn't be assumed that we just have to have this ever proliferation of the number of vaccines and the frequency of vaccines, all on the back of the historical victory of vaccinology over polio or smallpox or whatever.
Well, it adds a complex background as well that we perhaps could go into another time. Yeah. But, you know, people have to also look at the sacredness of the doctors, that people have been told to, see your doctor, rely on your doctor. Well, the straight answer is that doctors don't know anything about vaccines or vaccinology or immunology. Let's just be straight up about it. They are not experts in this, and they are not experts in COVID. And yet they are the front line dealing with people, or nurses, I suppose, more often than not, in giving these injections. Mm-hmm. And this is something that has to be examined now, because there is an incredible vaccine load being put on people. And it's children in particular now that are really copying this load. It's got to be looked at with COVID now coming. As I said before, I cannot understand how they've gotten away with giving these injections to children. They've got no idea what they are doing. When this started, it was the 2 injections. And then they're playing this by ear in an experiment. They say, 2 injections will be 95% effective or whatever. And then they say, it's waning. We'll better give a 3rd injection. They didn't change the composition of the injection. Mm-hmm. They just gave a 3rd injection. Now they're talking about a 4th. They're doing this on the fly. And now they have given these children injections. We don't know what's going to happen going forward. Are people going to be getting injections every 3 months? People overseas, European regulatory bodies have been saying people won't be able to take injections every 4 months. You know, what's it going to do to people's immune systems? Mm-hmm. This whole thing is a complete mess. And we've got to go back and see, how could this have happened? How could they have gone ahead with a massive experiment like this? You know, at the very most, they should have only given these injections to people who are at risk. You know, for them, it might have been worth the risk, worth the experiment. But to put this, to plan to be injecting the entire global population with something like this is mind-boggling, and it's more mind-boggling that more people haven't spoken out about it. And it's we've got a variety of things going on here. We've got these voices from authority, you know, the doctors and professors and what have you. And I won't use these terms anymore, because so many people are talking from authority on subjects that they're not qualified to talk about. Simply because they've got doctor or professor in front of their name, they think it gives them license to talk on all sorts of things. And we've got to start challenging this now, because they are not qualified to be saying that these things are safe and effective when we've got no idea what the future holds with these things. It's, you know, the other big problem is this term anti-vaxxer that has been, it's been set in place now for a number of years, this demonizing of people who question vaccination policy and practice, anti-vaxxer. These are medical interventions. They're serious medical interventions. You know, it's all very well having a medical intervention, a therapeutic product, if you've got a problem that's identifiable. But it's another thing entirely to give mass populations of people who might not even be at threat with this, with the disease or whatever, and to be giving them these medical interventions over and over again. And we have to stop this use of the anti-vaxxer title. And the doctors are using this title. Academics are using title to describe people. This is so unprofessional, and it must be stopped. We've got to stop this.
Yes.
Tagging people.
Yes, I remember very early in the piece, and it's become so tiresome. I've stopped doing, so many in our movement would say the preface whatever argument they were making by saying, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I've had the standard suite of vaccinations. I've been a pincushion all my professional career, blah, 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 as if they had to legitimize themselves. You know. But once again, it's just playing into the idea that all vaccines are holy, like all surgeries or all medications are holy, which is neither logical or evidence-based or anything. But, you do it. I felt a bit more relaxed, though, when I heard on the grapevine, and I checked it out, and there's a particular iteration of the Merriam-Webster dictionary that defines anti-vaxxers as those who oppose vaccine mandates. So I thought, okay, well, by definition, I'm one of those, and I'm an anti-vaxxer. But still, as you say, it's like it's this pejorative that's just a short circuit to signal in the listener, this person is a heretic, they're not to be listened to, they're crazy, they're whatever, but it's just a signalling device to shut down one's mind and to short-circuit towards a judgment. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's not an accident. Yeah. This has been set up on purpose to do this, to marginalise people who ask questions, to just shut them down immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're in this situation. I mean, as you said, I've been doing this for years now. I started off with pet vaccination. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was quite successful. We did get responses and attention on that. Mm-hmm. But I found with human vaccination, it's just amazing how people will not engage with this. Because I started investigating human vaccination and I was astonished at just how many injections are given to children. And, like the MMR, this wasn't an anti-vax argument. I asked, why were children given two doses of the live MMR vaccine? Because it seemed in theory they should be immune after the first dose because it's a live vaccine. And I found out they were doing it because some children might not respond to the first dose. So they give all the children a second dose. I thought that is just outrageous to be jabbing all of these children. You know, you could have an antibody titer test and verify.
Exactly.
That would be evidence-based medicine.
It would also be individualized medicine, which is the thing that we were always said that we were moving towards.
You know, that is funny, because when I said it with pet vaccination, the dog and cat vaccination guidelines, they focus on individualized medicine for the dogs and cats. Can you believe that? Mm-hmm. They say, depending on the actual needs of that specific animal, can be geographic or whatever regarding the vaccines. And yet here we've got, in human medicine, people just being treated like this herd when a lot of people might not need the vaccines or the injections. And plus, there are emerging problems with the injections now or the vaccines. The MMR, for example, which I had no problem with. Yeah, let's have one dose of the MMR, and have an antibody titer test. But then I came across a study that was indicating that the children of vaccinated mothers, so children of mothers who had been vaccinated with the MMR, those children had maternally derived antibodies which were waning earlier than the children of mothers who had wild type measles. Now, this was quite shocking to me because with the wild type measles, the babies' maternally derived antibodies might wane at 12 months. But with the children of mothers who had the vaccines, they might wane earlier at 9 months. Now, this is significant because the child isn't as developed. And I submitted some rapid responses to the British Medical Journal on this, which were published. But it wasn't followed through on. And I'm thinking to myself, this is an emerging problem. This should be being examined to see what the potential could be here. But it's like a head in the sand attitude of there will be nothing heard against the vaccines. And yet it's so serious now. When you look at what children are getting, they are getting an enormous vaccine load. It's got to be looked at. There are so many conflicts of interest around the vaccine schedule. You know, we have to look at the people who are approving these vaccines, who are putting them on the schedule. That's the thing that I've been investigating now for years as well, because that area was hidden from view, finding out who were the people on these committees, what were their conflicts of interest. We've had to draw this out, and it's still, there's still not enough information. But it's turning out that people who are involved in vaccine clinical trials themselves and with the vaccine industry, they're also in a position to be recommending what will go on the taxpayer-funded schedule. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of doctors might not realise this. They might not realise just how conflicted the schedule is. They might not even realise themselves just how many injections children are getting now. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we have to think about, and COVID is bringing this to a head with the potential that people could be being jabbed every few months, which is incredible to think about. And that the doctors have not been at the forefront of questioning this. They have failed the community. This is a sort of watershed moment as to looking at what is going on with doctors, what is going on in the universities. The universities are conflicted because they are getting funding from pharmaceutical companies. So it's impacting on everything, in that we're not getting objective and independent advice. People are conflicted. People are being silenced, you know, and we've got to blow this open now.
Yeah, and I'd say, though, that if they, upon the background of them having bought enough doses to cover 10 for every man, woman and child in the country, plus perhaps more, that they intended to put as many jabs in as many arms and just keep it going. But that if they roll it back, it'll just be because, well, they're quite cunning political players, and they'll know that they can only push it so far. And besides, the jabs are in the arms, the check is in the mail, Pfizer's got an extraordinary profit.
So I don't know about this, you know, we've got to look at this. What have we been signed up for? Why mm-hmm. has there been this desperation to get needles in arms? Mm-hmm. It isn't making sense. When they knew children and young people and most people were not at risk, why has there been this desperation to get the needles in the arms? What are these agreements that we've been signed up for? Mm-hmm. This is what's got to be examined now. I think there's all this commercial and confidence and what have you, but we've got companies like Pfizer, which is a criminal company. They've had billions of dollars worth of fines in the past, Pfizer and AstraZeneca, and the TGA has approved these products based on their data. So on Pfizer's data, that's what we're relying on. The general public, again, probably has no idea of what's going on here. These things have been provisionally approved, which means that this is an experiment that's going on. If people had been properly informed about this, there would be uproar. You wouldn't sign up for this if you knew what was going on. Provisionally approved based on manufacturer's data. Of course, they've got a conflict of interest, haven't they? Mm-hmm. How can you rely on this data? And they're relying now on the information they're collecting around the world. We've got organizations like in America, the CDC conflicted, mm-hmm. the FDA conflicted. They are sort of hiding information. It's not transparent. They are desperate to keep this whole vaccination thing rolling on. You know, there's so much to be exposed.
There is so much to be exposed. But the thing is, in exposing it, you know, from anti-vaxxer to another term, in seeking to expose it, then you're accused of being a conspiracy theorist, which is ironically a conspiracy in and of itself. You might be aware that in 1967 there was a thing called the Warren Report, and the CIA's response to those who questioned the standard narrative around Kennedy's assassination, the CIA's response was to, circulate this meme term conspiracy theorist and discredit anybody who says it. And it was remarkably effective. Conspiracy theorist was itself a conspiracy. And so, once again, it's a term which it seeks in the ears of the listener to just result in an automatic judgment. This person is not to be listened to. Why? Because they're a conspiracy theorist, even if they say something for which they have abundant evidence. It's crazy.
It's the same thing as the anti-vaxxer labeling.
Yeah,
you know,
anti-vaxxer
conspiracy.
It's the same
thing. Marginalise people, yeah. Shut them down.
Yes, and the way we combat that is to just say it loud and proud. Yes, I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Well, the other thing is we could be looking at too, mentioning the TGA, mm-hmm. is to just question, you know, what this regulation is getting for us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'd be a lot better off if we didn't have regulation.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like with the TGA approving these products, they've approved the product, the ATAGI have recommended the product, and the next thing we know, we've got a mandated medical intervention. Perhaps we'd probably be safer if we didn't have the so-called regulators like the TGA, which is conflicted because it gets its money from the industry.
Mm.
You know, we might be safer. We wouldn't be tied into being forced into having these medical interventions. Mm. This is another thing that's got to be looked at. What regulation, who is it working for, actually?
And we'll look at that, at least our conversation, in the third act coming up. This is TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Some independent candidates will be a good alternative to the major parties, but beware, many so-called independents will be financed by the Climate 200 organisation, which is throwing millions of dollars at this election. The convener of Climate 200 is Simon Holmes-a-Court, son of Australia's first billionaire Robert Holmes-a-Court of corporate rating fame. Climate 200 claims Australia needs to reduce its emissions by 75% by 2030 below 2005 levels. Yes, in just 8 years. This would destroy the nation's economy. Climate 200 claims 99% of our coral reefs would be dead with a 3-degree temperature rise. Nonsense. When the dinosaurs roamed the planet during the Jurassic period, coral reefs were more expansive and the average global air temperature was at about 22 degrees Celsius. Today, it is just under 15 degrees Celsius. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
This is it. Your chance to come face to face with a Royal Marines Commando. They've set you a mission, so you will need to listen to the following instructions very carefully. Meet at the rendezvous. The Royal Marine Commandos will be there waiting for you. Locate them, talk to them, and learn about what it takes to become a Royal Marines Commando. To find out more details about this secret mission, call 0117 926 0233. Got that? 0117 926 0233. However, you should be aware, complete this mission, and your future missions will be a lot more challenging. Royal Marine Commandos. 99.99% need not apply.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several world leaders and notable multinational corporations now actively promote an energy transformation to so-called clean green hydrogen. Mainstream media will not expose the facts on the hydrogen fuel alternative. Hydrogen is an energy carrier, not an energy source. It requires enormous energy from another source to create it. And this storage of energy in hydrogen is very expensive. It can be compressed or stored chemically at a higher density, such as in metal hydrides. But this is all resource intensive. If you want higher energy bills, hydrogen will help. If you want higher costs of living, hydrogen will help. And burning hydrogen in air is not so environmentally friendly. It may produce emissions with up to 6 times higher levels of toxic nitrogen oxides compared with burning natural gas.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in.
Today's
News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Robert Brennan with anti-COVID cult crusader Elizabeth Hart. You can find Elizabeth's work on vaccinationispolitical.net. And so, yeah, we could talk for hours, but, you know, you've been taking on ATAGI and Nigel Crawford and all the other players in the mix. I mean, you know, there's the Murdoch Children's Institute, there's the Doherty Institute, there's Monash, there's the TGA, ATAGI, APRA, you name it. But closer to the home of you, South Australia, there's South Australian University epidemiologist Adrian Esterman, who, well, you can't keep a bad epidemiology down. He's saying that masks absolutely should be worn now because there are other variants on the march. And so, you know, what's your take on that?
What is going on with these people? They're desperate to have mm-hmm. people masked all the time. How mm-hmm. unnatural this is. Mm-hmm. We've gotten through our lives without these masks.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the last 2 years, they're desperate for us to be just wearing strips of cloth across our face. You know, people have been wearing the same old grubby masks over and over again. You know, if this was so serious, so deadly, you know, you'd be having to dispose of these highly dangerous masks, wouldn't you, because of all the virus they're picking up. You know, this whole thing is a farce. Who is Adrian Esterman exactly? What's his expertise on masks? And, you know, what evidence is he using to support
this? Epidemiology. He's an epidemiologist.
Well, epidemiologists, you know, I mean, can we just click them all up and lock them up and throw away the key? Mm-hmm. These epidemiologists are the bane of our lives. We've gotten through our lives without them. And now all of a sudden, these people have come out of the woodwork and we can't get them out of our lives. Mm. Who are these people? They are interrupting and interfering with the lives of millions and millions of people. And, you know, professor this or doctor that says something or other. I don't care anymore who they, you know, can they just get me to get rid of them? Because why should they be having this influence on our lives? And if they do, we should get, the evidence should come from them. They should be open to challenge. But you try writing to them. I've written to Adrian Esterman. Guess what? I'm blocked. This is just what we face across the board. You know, censorship, being shut down. They refuse to engage with the public. They are too lofty to be able to discuss things. You get blocked. How, what sort of science is that, where people simply will not engage and prove what they're talking about?
Yes, especially when they, you know, let's say cherry-pick the science. I mean, Paul Elias Alexander has written in the Brownstone Institute's publication 150-plus studies, and we're counting by the day, are contra wearing masks to control this particular virus. And the experience of our own eyes tells us the same.
Well, how much damage are these masks causing? Mm-hmm. Children have been masked. Mm-hmm. In South Australia, children are still being forced to wear masks in school.
Wow.
I think child abuse, quite frankly. Wow. You know, here's a virus that children weren't at risk of. They, you know, they might have got it. It might even had an impact on them at all because their innate immunity is just so effective. This whole creating of this demon of the virus and the disease, they've created this massive bogeyman now, and I don't know how they're going to be able to walk back from it. But the thing is, we don't know going forward if there's something else that's been created with these injections, if these injections will be causing problems in the future. Mm-hmm. This is unprecedented to have injected mass populations with injections which were developed so quickly. Now we have no idea we're hearing about blood clots and strokes and heart attacks. And how can we rely on this to be evaluated properly when we know the whole system is sort of corrupted? How can we rely on it to tell us what's really going on? The trials for these vaccines, I think all the control groups are gone because they ended up jabbing the people who are in the control groups.
Just about.
How about that for science? Yes. You know, it's people who are unjabbed now. We're the control group. It should be, you know, checking what happens to us in the future because we haven't got official control groups. Mm-hmm. This is the biggest shambles that has ever happened. And the scientific establishment, the medical profession are going to be trashed because of what they have participated in and allowed to happen.
Mm. Yes. Well, let the unrighteous be unrighteous still. Yes. Well, but back to masks and Adrian Esterman. I mean, We do have this body of evidence against them, and I'm shocked to hear that they're still being required to be worn in South Australia in schools.
But this other thing that's happening as well. They dropped the mandates for teachers and police to have the injections, but now what they're doing is sort of punishment, really. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have had the third be jabbed on and have the third jab, otherwise you have to wear a mask.
Mm.
And have testing, regular testing. So, and you think, why are they doing that? The people who've been jabbed, they can still get infected and transmit the virus, but they're not having to wear masks. But these people who've decided to have made their own informed decision to rely on their own immune system to protect them, they're being punished because they will not comply and they're being marked out by wearing masks. See how they're being identified. Here's a person who will not comply. We're going to mask them and punish them. How bad is this? It's so bad. And yet people in the community who've had two jabs maybe months ago and whatever supposed protection would have waned months ago, the whole thing is a farce. There's no logic to this. All they wanted is for people to take these injections and do as they're told. You know, was there anything, did they promote good health? Did they promote getting vitamin D, exposure to the sun, good diet, exercise? Was that ever at the forefront in the response to this virus? No. Everything was about making people as anxious and worried and locking them in their homes and masking them. It seemed like everything was done to make people vulnerable to the virus rather than the other way around.
Mm.
Yeah. What do you think about that as a doctor yourself?
Needless to say, on 99% of the points of which you speak, that, you know, you're preaching to the converted. I'm just thinking, well, we could talk about so many things for so many hours, but it's putting the virus aside, it's the introduction of a technology into the marketplace, that being mRNA. And mRNA codes for proteins in the general sense. And so it's the introduction of a technology that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the applications are extraordinary for good or for ill. And it's the introduction of a technology to a people where they are being taught to not have faith in natural immunity and to, you know, an enculturation to think, well, they just need to be a little bit better, a little bit different. I mean, what next will we be able to do with mRNA? What protein could it code for, and how might that be sold as enhancing the recipient? And the next one will be rolling it out for other vaccines, for other microbial illness, but there'll be other applications besides. I think that's what they have in mind. This is just the beginning.
Well, it's the technocrats, isn't it? All sorts of things are happening without proper ethical oversight. You know, driverless cars, you know, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Again, the human body is an amazing thing. The immune system is an amazing thing. We don't need this constant interruption. If people led healthier lifestyles, you know, that people are being led to think that there's a magic bullet for everything. You know, they don't have to have any pain, have this pill to be happy, take an antidepressant, you know, opioids. We've seen all the damage that's causing.
Mm-hmm.
This society it's a medical industrial complex that's just pressing people to have pharmaceutical products all the time. And doctors are now sort of like pill dispensers. Instead of going to a doctor for advice, you know, and discussion, and it doesn't always have to be an intervention that's required. No, there's always this, it seems to be a prescription has to be on the end of every consult now, and selling a product, getting people latched onto proton pump inhibitors, you know, for you know, reflux and what have you. People seem to be, the plan is to get people hooked on medical inventions all the time. And the vaccines now seem to be this fantastic market for the pharmaceutical industry. They're always looking for new markets. They've got a market now where they are protected from liability. They have got this incredible situation where they're being rewarded for having defective products. You know, other areas, if you bought a car that stopped working after a year, you would say, well, that's a rubbish car, isn't it? But no, they inject these vaccines that will, in inverted commas, they're giving the people these injections which supposedly will wane in a few weeks and have another one. Where mm-hmm. else can you do that? What a fantastic model they've got now to be making products that don't work and just have another one. It's incredible. You know, I had a situation recently where I fell. You know, I do bushwalking and I slipped and I wrenched my leg but quite badly, and it was very painful and you're limping around. And yet I marvel at the human body at how after a couple of weeks, it's completely fixed. You know, your body just fixed this up. You didn't need an intervention. And it can be the same for these respiratory diseases. You know, for most people, they will pass. You do not need to be set up with injections every few months. We've got to break this down and honour natural health, you know? It's the pharmaceutical industry that is cancelling out natural health.
Mm.
And doctors have to, you know, rise up and you know, go back to their basics and actually be working with people and healing people. Now, I'm not against medicine. You know, of course, there are times when medicine is required and interventions are required. But when we've got these mass population interventions happening with injections just being given to people to supposedly protect them from some threat that may never have been a risk to them, we know that things have gone seriously haywire.
That's right. And their own risk calculus is informed by the death numbers that they're given by the, how did you term it, you know, the pharmaceutical, political, industrial, media academic establishment. But have you heard the latest from everybody's favourite Ethiopian communist sycophant of CCP, Tedros Ghebreyesus of the World Health Organization? See, we would say that the total death toll, well, from COVID was overcounted because many persons died from other things. From the effects of lockdown itself, say in food distribution in the third world and despair and opiate abuse and all sorts of things in the developed world and developing world also. But also there's a component of vaccine injury that contributes to deaths. But no, Tedros is saying that's not the deaths that we need to worry about. We can double the number of COVID deaths from COVID itself, but also the impact of the virus as if the government didn't do anything. The governments of the world didn't do everything. So now the estimate is 15 million people have died from the impacts of the virus. So, I don't know.
It's the impacts of the response to the virus.
Well, we would say that, but yeah, they're going to sell it that, no, forget about all that. These 15 million deaths, it's all the impact of the virus.
Well, wouldn't they? Yeah. 15 million deaths in a population of 7.9 billion people over 2 years, mm-hmm. even that is insignificant. You know, they are desperate to beat these numbers up because they know these numbers are not adding up for this response.
No, that's right.
The response has been unbelievable. They've spent billions and billions of dollars on this response. We've got no idea now going forward of how damaging the injections might be for populations. That is a total unknown now, you know, what they've done. You know, we've got to start challenging the World Health Organization. Who is this organization? You know, get rid of it, in my opinion. They are at the front for the vaccine industry, and this has got to be exposed. The last figures I looked at, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the second highest contributor to the World Health Organization. First contributor is Germany. Then third was the US, fourth was the UK, and then the Gavi Alliance, which was founded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Which is essentially the same thing. Yeah. So,
And the public doesn't realise this, that this organisation is funded by these organisations and countries which are a major part of the vaccine industry. So the World Health Organization, health, you know, in inverted commas, is the front for the vaccine industry. So, of course, they've got this, you know, desire to beat up vaccines all the time. It's become about vaccines. We have to challenge this vaccine situation, particularly now. If we go back and look at old definitions of vaccine and vaccination in the dictionary, these things that they're giving now are not vaccines. We have to demand that we have discussion about this. This is an emergency. We are now, in a real emergency. Mm. And the emergency is this incredible onslaught of vaccine products, in inverted commas again, on our society. We have to discuss this. People like Tedros, as you say, Fauci in America has been in his position since the mid-80s. These people have dominated this area. They are so powerful. They've controlled everything. They have shut out people who question things. People have been labeled anti-vaxxers. And that is now why we have come to this situation where this thing has gone completely berserk. Mm. We have to talk about the vaccine schedule. We have to talk about where this is going.
Yes, those that sit outside democracy are the ones that have the power. And yet we have an election coming up. This has been TNT Radio with my very special guest, Elizabeth Hart. You can find her work on vaccinationispolitical.net. Good evening.